Hi, my name is Lior Kisos from Israel, author of the first I-18N version of the Drupal song, and you are listening to the Lullabot Drupal podcast.
March 21st, 2008, it's the Lullabot podcast.
Lullabot podcast.
It's episode 56 of the Lullabot Drupal podcast. We get together every week. I'm just going to keep saying every week, even though it's not quite every week, to do the podcast about Drupal with the team from the Lullabot company.
You all right, man?
I don't know. I've been to so many conferences. I've just been conferencing. I've been so proud of myself, like trying to hold my health together and stuff, and I'm just starting to lose it. I really am. I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with
Angie Byron.
And also
Addie Berry.
As well as
Kent Bye.
Kent Bye. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Woo-hoo.
Kent Bye? Who's this Kent Bye person?
Who's this Kent Bye I keep hearing all about? Kent Bye is the newest addition to the Lullabot team. He's come along to help us with various things. Kent is super extra multi-talented human being. Not unlike the rest of you. but yeah, I guess we could just start right off with that announcement that we're starting. People have been asking us about this for a long time, whenever we do workshops, people ask us if they can get a video of the workshop or some sort of video training kinds of things from Lullabot. And we're actually starting a DVD series, the first of which is called Understanding Drupal, and it's sort of a general introduction to the Drupal concepts and all. Sort of, I don't know, you know, kind of diving into Drupal, the basic stuff you need to know in order to start learning other stuff about Drupal. And Kent, among his talents, is a video editing guy. A video maker.
Master.
Video master. Is that how you would describe it, Kent?
Yeah, video editor, director, producer, sort of.
Master.
Trying to extract little nuggets of insight and information about Drupal. This first one, beginning one, is really for people just starting to get into Drupal, get over the first part of the learning curve, and to really just sort of dive in and know the jargon and know sort of how to get around. And it's something that should be designed that people could sit down in an afternoon and sort of watch it and get up to speed as opposed to, you know, trying to download it and figure it out that way and being kind of lost. So it's sort of trying to get rid of a lot of that initial confusion that people have when they're first getting started. So
it answers the question, what is a node?
Yes.
Yeah, and this is just going to be the first of a whole series of DVDs that we're currently talking about. But as we were starting to sort of outline the series, what we were realizing was that there was just kind of some basics that we would need to cover in any DVD, and so this first one is sort of that basics DVD. And if you go to lullabot.com, on the homepage of lullabot.com, there's a link to the trailer. We made a trailer for the DVD. We didn't get the guy that says in a world, but we thought about it. So go check it out. We're really proud about it and excited about all that Kent is bringing to Lullabot. We're just excited. We're often excited, and we are again. And I'm loopy. I apologize. Let's see. We've got workshops coming up in Australia. If you are in or near Australia or would like to visit, we've got a week-long workshop from April 7th through the 11th in Melbourne, Australia. You can find out all about this at lullabot.com/training. There are two workshops that happen over the course of the week. Drupal theming and jQuery is one of the workshops, and then Drupal API and module building is the other workshop, and you can sign up for both and get a discount. We've also got workshops coming up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. On a previous previous podcast, we announced Des Moines was happening. That kind of fell apart. We had some problems with the scheduling on that one, and now we're doing Minneapolis to sort of other Midwest area. and Minneapolis is happening May 5th through the 9th of 2008, and basically the same kind of stuff that we're teaching in Australia, we will be teaching in Minneapolis, except instead of using an Australian accent, we will be using a Minneapolis accent.
Oh, for corn's sake there now, you know. Yeah.
Yes, Angie Byron, who grew up in Minnesota, will be coming and leading the cultural exploration.
Yeah, we were just in Minnesota actually doing some usability testing, which was
We should talk about, we'll talk about that in a moment. I just want to mention also we've got early bird discounts for Minneapolis that are currently still on again lullabot.com/training and you can get in on the early bird discount for Minnesota. Basically this podcast is a, we were going to do like a DrupalCon wrap up. Actually, the other thing that we said on the previous podcast would, that this would be the next podcast would be the live podcast from DrupalCon. But again, we had some scheduling problems and confusion and, health. We were doing a lot of traveling and that didn't end up happening. There was a bug that went through the Lullabot team one at a time. Each of us got to spend a day by ourselves in our hotel room doing some introspective time. It was me.
Getting to know our toilet.
Exactly. And yes. Praying to the porcelain goddess. So we're here. Still doing the DrupalCon wrap up, but not actually. We're not actually in Boston. We're back home again, and doing that kind of thing. So, are there any other before we get into the DrupalCon wrap up stuff? Are there any other announcements that we have?
I have one. Summer of Code just kicked off. Drupal was selected as a mentoring organization officially as of yesterday. Monday of the week that this podcast comes out, I meant. And, so we need people, all hands on deck, to kind of, help get these new students situated and finding the resources that they need. And also mentors, if you're familiar with Drupal coding, or if you just have, like, expertise in a particular industry, like education or something like that, and you think that that would be, something that you could sort of lend guidance on in that perspective on a project. What we need, or we need project ideas from the community. We need people to review the incoming project ideas coming from students. And we also need people just to be around and pound Drupal to kind of, you know, point people at resources or, you know, help them find individuals who are knowledgeable in a particular area that they're interested in, stuff like that. So, if you go to groups.drupal.com,
soc.org.
Very sorry. My brain is not quite in gear today. .org/soc-2008. That's where we're trying something different this year. We're having like an open process of reviewing applications just because, you know, that way students will know right off the bat if this is an idea that the community generally finds, you know, like, yeah, right on, go for it, or if it's something that, well, there's already 100 modules that do the same thing and that sort of thing, which would help them sort of focus their applications a little bit better, and also lets us get to know them a little bit before they participate in Summer of Code.
Oh, that's really cool. So there's some sort of early discussion so people can kind of,
yeah.
I like that. So groups.drupal.org/soc-2008. Did I hear that correctly?
That is right.
Okay.
That's the group four where we're kind of publicly vetting all the applications. And then there's also an SOC 2008 mentors group, SOC-2008-mentors. That's a closed group just for mentor discussion. Right now, we're not really doing anything with it, but eventually that'll be, like, if we have any problems with students and stuff, we'll need to talk about that there.
Problems, students, but, yes. Send them to the principal.
Or problems with mentors. We have that, too.
Yes. So, you need a dash students group as well.
Too. Yeah, we do. Right? So people can talk smack about each other. No. Yeah, we might get rid of the mentors group. I'm not quite sure. But at any rate, it helps us kind of get a – just to – if you sign up there and also at the Google application, there's information there on all that stuff. That'll help us just kind of get an inventory of who we have participating as mentors. And the more mentors we have, the more students we can take on and the more the more diverse set of projects that we can do as well. So just wanted to say – check it out. It's a lot of fun. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Summer of Code, and there's a lot of other people who could say that. And, it's near and dear to my heart. So, if you want to participate, go for it. It's awesome.
Yep. And people can find out – can they find out more just general information about Google of Summer of Code somewhere?
Yeah.
Maybe if you went into Google and searched for Summer of Code.
You may find it. That's at code.google.com/SOC/2008.
There you go.
But the general idea is that students get paid over the summer to work on a, 3-month-long project, 2.5 months, whatever. And these tend to be projects that are a little more like R&D in nature because we're kind of throwing these – sums of money that aren't coming from the Drupal community, so it gives us some freedom to sort of experiment and try some really crazy things. And also just some much-needed stuff in the community that needs doing. Nice to get students involved in that. And also, if you're a long-time contributor to Drupal even, and you are happen to be a college or a university student currently, apply. We gave Gabor, Stephen Wittens, Andrew Morton, a bunch of existing contributors some funds over the summer to help with coding things. So yeah, anyway, everybody, check it out. It's awesome.
Cool. We have a couple of websites to mention. People have been sort of buzzing about the new DrupalModules.com, which is holy smokes. It's a website that reviews Drupal modules and rates them and has graphs, graphy graphs.
Yes, it's one of the – they sort of have a 4-point scale here of – they call it FRED, features, reliability, ease of use, and documentation. So do you guys know how they're actually gathering all this information? Is it user –
apparently, if your name is Fred – you can go and you can vote. No. It's sort of like the Nielsen ratings. If your name is Nielsen, you watch TV, you write down what you watch.
It's all happening. As far as I understand, the site is basically screen scraping to build the information, so like what all the modules are, what versions they are, and stuff like that. And then you go to the site, create an account on the site, and then all of the rating and reviewing is just – and download statistics are just through that site. It's not linked to Drupal.org, per se.
Nice.
Well, it'd be interesting to see how this works. certainly, ratings is something that people ask for a lot on Drupal.org, but usually the pushback is like, well, how would they actually really work? And then, can people sort of game the system? And we'll sort of see, because lots of times, just because a module's downloaded a lot doesn't necessarily mean that it's even the best module to do that thing. It's just got the name that looks like it would do that thing. And so, I don't know. It's sort of interesting. I'm really excited. It's a nice design, by the way, too. Good stuff. And also our friends, Jared and Dave, who both work for Sony, Sony Records, have started a website called, I don't even know how you'd pronounce this out loud, Drupal Mao or Drupal Lmao, I guess, L-M-A-O. So Drupal, DrupalMao.com.
Drupal my ass off.
Yes, yeah. There you go. And they have a video podcast that's sort of Dignation-like for people who are familiar with that. Basically, they sit on a couch and drink beer and talk about Drupal. And it's oftentimes hilarious.
They also actually at the code sprint at MIT, they actually sat down with a number of people and
I know they were sober.
Them. Yeah,
they, it was no beer.
Didn't really allow any beer on the MIT campus.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, they have they did a series of sit down interviews, which were kind of interesting to sort of doing short little recaps of DrupalCon. So those are the latest videos. But it seems like they're going to be sitting down and talking for anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes up to an hour about Drupal. So
I think that people sitting down for 20 minutes up to an hour talking about Drupal is I don't see any future in it. certainly you wouldn't be able to do 56 of these. Oh my, woe is my life. So what else? We'll talk about all about DrupalCon, but after DrupalCon, several of the Lullabot team went down to South by Southwest, and I just wanted to mention that Jeff Eaton did a presentation as part of the what were they calling it? The CMS Roundup, which was the fourth day of South by Southwest, which tends to be a lot oriented around going out and drinking at night, meeting people and stuff. But it was the fourth day, first session. It was packed room. There was a guy there talking about Microsoft Silverlight, a guy who wasn't actually from the Expression Engine team, but talking about Expression Engine and another what was the other one? The story really loses it if I can't remember the names of all the CMSs. Anyways, Jeff Eaton got up and talked about Drupal, and he did a really great job. The room seemed to just really light up. It seems like Drupal is really getting out there name wise, and it was just really interesting to see especially compared to the Microsoft Silverlight. I mean, Microsoft, they certainly have their thing. They do their thing. They're good at their thing. But in this room, I have to say, Drupal kind of ruled. And anyways, it was really cool. I think that there will be South by Southwest people do put up the audio from and sometimes video as well from almost all of the sessions that go on at South by Southwest. So at some point, hopefully we'll be able to link off to that when they get their audio up. But Yeah,
they have it. It's actually, if you go to 208.sxsw.com/coverage/podcasts, not all of them, but they have a number of them. There's sort of MP3 files linked there. So
right on. Cool. Yeah. So let's talk about DrupalCon, because we all went there, and it was fascinating. I mean, first of all, it was big.
Yeah. 800 people big.
800 plus, yeah.
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 I was really, it seemed like, a lot of times you go to conferences, and it seems like a lot of the sessions were actually really full. You figure over a course of a week, they'd be sort of having people coming and going, but for the most part, for the whole week, there's certainly well over 600 to 800 people there, especially in the first couple of days.
Yeah. Yeah. So it happened at the Boston Convention Center. We had, four, conference rooms like they have at a convention center. That I guess the walls went down between a couple of them for the keynote would happen basically all in one room. Four different tracks happening. So basically when it wasn't the keynote, there were four different rooms that were happening. And then there was also the Birds of a Feather room, right? And another room that was like the nap room or something, right? The green room. I don't even know what they were calling it, but it was just buzzing. It was a good setup. I think in Barcelona, the setup was a little more sort of ad hoc, and I think there was a big like open area in Barcelona, but it was all full of computers and people could set up their computers. And the problem with I think the Drupal people is that when there is that space, they'll tend to set up their computers and like check their email and stuff. And I felt like there was a really good sort of socializing kind of place in the area, the sort of the lobby of the Boston convention, the Boston DrupalCon. And it was really good. I felt like I had a good chance to kind of connect with a lot of people and that kind of thing. Yeah. And my band played.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was a great show.
That was totally awesome. I was so sad that I was still recovering from being sick because I couldn't get into the mosh pit, but
that was like the tamest mosh pit ever. It was like everyone like, aww.
Oh, don't hit too hard.
Oh man, that was hilarious.
Oh, we did. I think Nate caught a little video of that. So
a little bit, yeah. I don't know, something on his camera or something. But yeah. So yeah, my band Orbit. You can find out more about Orbit at orbitband.com. Played Acquia through a party on Tuesday evening, and we got to play, and all the people and who knew me from my Drupal side of things got to see my music side of things, I guess, which was interesting. Crazy mashing of the worlds. So
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. What else happened at DrupalCon? I mean, it was sort of the general like Acquia outing. So for people who were just kind of new to Drupal and new to all this, Acquia is a company that was started by a guy named Jay Batson, along with Dries Buitart, who's the founder of the Drupal project. And Acquia, the company, is based in the Boston area. And I don't know, they started up a company, which is a big deal because Dries had been in at university for basically on and off. He'd been at university since Drupal had started. So Dries never really had a job, you know, in Drupal. I mean, it was always sort of his hobby kind of a thing. And so this is his first company. And went out and raised some money, but everyone was sort of wondering, you know, exactly what they're doing and how they're doing it and stuff. And it seemed like this was kind of their chance to kind of get out there and put themselves out there in the Drupal community. And they also did a session where they kind of explained what they did. Does anybody want to talk a little bit about that?
I don't know that I caught that session, but well, I've, you know, caught up on the back talk of it. Kent, were you there?
I wasn't. I was actually at another session at the time, but I know if you go, they sort of announced three big projects. One is called Carbon, one is called Spokes, and one is called Yellow Jersey. Their Carbon is sort of their Drupal distribution package, where they're basically going to be providing support for 30 to 40 Drupal modules along with Drupal and sending along as a sort of package, and it's going to be geared towards enterprises. And Spokes is going to be their system to sort of notify people of the updates, and the Yellow Jersey is their sort of certification program that was recently announced. It's going to be sort of teaching, getting certification for new Drupal developers to be sort of hip to, I guess, being able to work with their modules, but also Drupal in general. So that seemed to be the big news, and I don't know. I guess Angie, you can fill in with anything else that you know of.
No, that's about it. So cool.
Well, they keep saying, you know, they say that they are sort of to Drupal as Red Hat is to Linux. Sort of a enterprise layer on top of it.
Yeah, basically, like someone that you know. Matt always says, like, in open source, people are nervous because there's no one to blame, and they're saying, hey, you can blame us. They offer, you know, support for these 30 modules that they've identified in the community, and my understanding is they're going to be providing unit testing
and so on for these modules, and basically guaranteeing them to work in their distribution as long as everything goes smoothly. So, I think that should be an interesting thing. It's something a lot of companies have asked for, certainly, like before going, because open source is a little scary to big companies that are used to working with places like Microsoft and stuff, because with Acquia they'd get support contracts and they'd get, you know, someone to call at 3 a.m. and you know, that kind of stuff. And I think it'd be good.
Call Acquia at 3 a.m. You heard it here first, folks.
Hey, can we sign up so that we can call them at 3 a.m? just be like, hey, what's up?
Hey, Dries, how's it going, man?
So let's move on. So the Knight Foundation, they made sort of a big announcement, would you say, at DrupalCon? I mean, of sorts, at least.
Yeah, it's sort of open-ended in a way. It's not really defined a specific amount of money that this the Knight Foundation is basically a journalism foundation. They've been supporting these efforts for community journalism, and they've had these sort of series of grants that they've been giving away over the last couple of years or so. And I think what they realized was that instead of just giving money to project-specific things, they're really turning an eye towards infrastructure, and they really see Drupal as a key part of like the community infrastructure. So what they announced was sort of like this open-ended, like submit your idea to be funded by the Knight Foundation and contributed back to the Drupal project. So they had a couple of birds of a feather and meetings about it, a session, and it looks like if you go to the groups.drupal.org/Knight-Foundation, there's sort of ongoing discussions for exactly what that's going to look like and what will happen with that.
And that's Knight, as in Knight on horseback, Knigget.
Right.
Knigget.
Sorry, Monty Python, I couldn't help myself.
That kind of night, yeah. And we talk. I was at the tail end of that BOF, and they're talking about basically making, basically having a. They're going to be using the Drupal infrastructure basically in order to help plan these things out, so they can basically get more of community input into this kind of thing, because what's been happening is the Knight Foundation application process all happens on their infrastructure, and, you know, people who apply for that have to come back to Drupal and say, like, please look at my proposal and stuff like that, and it tends to get lost in the shuffle. And so we learned this in the GHOP program as well, that Drupal.org people tend to only look at Drupal.org stuff. So they're, Ken Rickard's doing a lot of work to try and get this stuff happening on groups.drupal.org, and then actually using issue trackers on Drupal.org to track the progress of these projects, because that'll help get more people involved and stuff like that. So I think it's cool. And it's really big ticket stuff. So it's great for Summer of Code is good for like isolated, like sort of let's build, a feed API. Cool. You know, that kind of stuff. Where the Knight Foundation could really be like, you know, let's retool the entire way that, you know, locations are handled in Drupal, and let's build out these 11 modules that need to be done for this, and here's, you know, $200,000 to make that happen, stuff like that. So it's a neat, it's really cool that they're taking an interest in our community. They also were platinum sponsors at DrupalCon and donated, I think, $15,000 to help put that on, so that was really awesome of them too. But great people. I'm excited to see how that relationship pans out.
Yeah. So what you're saying is basically like, if there's people out there who are listening who have some ideas for improving Drupal, just in Drupal in general, or like specific to...
You have to make the case for why it empowers citizen journalism.
Okay.
But
on the other hand, you could also argue that Drupal empowers citizen journalism.
Exactly. So if you could say that if I improve the mapping functionality in Drupal, that will allow citizen journalism sites to plot events as they're happening, something like that. That would be the angle to spin it on,
right,
or what have you. But yeah, I mean, just about anything in Drupal, you could make the case that it's going to help that their ends. We're even talking possibly about some of the usability stuff that we found going through the Knight Foundation to improve that.
Wow.
So,
So basically they're saying, like, we've got a whole lot of money, come tell us what you want to do, and we'll, you know, we've got grants that we can give, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's pretty cool. That's really very cool. Great. So, there were a bunch of things that sort of came out of Dries's keynote. It's interesting to see Dries's keynotes happen over the course of DrupalCons. I mean, he's always been sort of what would be the word?
Soft-spoken leader.
Yeah, soft-spoken leader. Exactly. Like he doesn't. He in the past he hasn't really liked to get out there and say, "This is where we're gonna go." He's not Steve Ballmer, right? He's not gonna. This is what we're gonna do. We're gonna do this thing, you know. And so even early on, he was a little bit afraid about even kind of getting up and or having a roadmap or anything like that. And we still don't have a roadmap per se, but he does get up and just sort of talk about, like, wouldn't it be cool if, and here are some nice directions, and these kind of things. And I think that the community really needs that, because otherwise, I don't know, I mean, the community is just sort of looking for a beacon, right? They're looking for the light to follow, and so Dries's keynotes has sort of become this over time, I think. What were some of the things that Dries talked about, and how are those starting to affect things and the sort of ripples that rippled out in DrupalCon based on those things?
I think one of the big two big announcements. One was sort of like the really strong push for testing, and that if there was both functional and unit test within Drupal, then he's willing to really extend the development cycle. Ordinarily, have a year development cycle with, you know, 5 months of active development and then the rest of it sort of bug fixing. So the majority of time has traditionally been sort of fixing all the bugs that the new features brought in. And basically what he said was that if we implement a testing framework, he's willing to give us 9 months of new features and time to sort of put in all these innovations and then 3 months of bug fixing. Assuming that there's enough community support, and that's sort of the big caveat.
So what does that mean exactly? Does that mean, like, the testing? So when someone submits a patch for Drupal to change the way that thing X or thing Y works, right? You know, they're, I don't know, make it easier to log in. I don't know, you know, something. I'll use Angie's comment. She changed the way that the way that signatures worked for what went into Drupal 6. If someone submits a patch like that, there was talk about testing happening in an automated way on Drupal.org, so that there would be like sort of this robot kind of thing that would go in and it would apply the patch and then run a series of tests on Drupal to see if, you know, everything still worked correctly. Is that what we're talking about?
Yep. So one of the projects or one of the talks that I did at DrupalCon was on testing. And one of the things we covered there was this automated testing framework. If you go to testing.drupal.org, you can see examples of how this works. What this is basically doing is it's testing one to make sure that the patch actually applies. Which is nice because that wastes human brain power otherwise figuring that stuff out. And two, it'll also test to make sure that the test passes all of the unit tests, that we have written already. So there's a lot of work in the simple test queue right now, which is simple test is the module that we use right now for unit testing. Dries is still planning to evaluate and just make sure that's the best option to go in. But the nice thing about simple test is it can do both unit level testing. So for example, you know, the T function, here's the 11 different things you can pass into the T function and what it should return when it's all said and done. And you do that for every single function. That's like the individual unit testing part of it. But it can also do functional testing and integration testing, which means, you know, let's test the functionality of user module. Let's simulate a user logging into the page and then editing their profile and changing this value and make sure that this thing that we change shows up on this other side over here. So that's, you know, that's the power of SimpleTest can do both of those things. Right now for core, we have about 60% functional testing and about 0% unit testing coverage. So the idea is to build a huge mass of people that are going to help kind of drive that forward and stuff like that. And so far, I think it's still a little slow to catch on, but Jimmy Berry, one of the G-Hop students, and Rox Lender and Chicks, Karoli Nigishi, they're all really active on the SimpleTest side of things, trying to, you know, spiff that up so that we can start bringing that module and stuff into core. And then basically it would allow us to compete with, like, say, Ruby on Rails that comes with a testing framework built inside of it. So as you're developing, you can check periodically to make sure that what you've just built didn't change or alter any of the tests in the way that they should run. So, yeah.
Interesting. So basically it would sort of automate this process because currently, or at least part of the process, because currently someone uploads a patch and then you need people to test it. And that's very, you know, like haphazard. People download it. Hopefully they can get the patch to apply. Then they, I don't know, I created some web pages. It seems like it's fine. Good. You know, and yeah. So this would be a more, we'd have an army of robots at our disposal.
Yeah, I mean, you'll still need the human touch, but the nice thing is that if I'm downloading a patch that's been marked code needs review and it hasn't been marked needs work by the automated testing scripts once those are wired together, then I know that, okay, I don't have to check the simple, stupid crap. I know that this didn't break installation. I know that this didn't break, you know, creating a node form. So now let's try seeing what this function actually does, and let's try, you know, breaking stuff related to the feature or the bug that's being fixed. So it makes the testers' lives a lot easier too, because they don't have to, you know, do this manual process of click, 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 click through all this stuff just to thoroughly test a patch and make sure it didn't break anything. We let the computer do that and let the human focus on the more, you know, difficult problems, which are like, you know, is this the most elegant way to implement this feature? And, you know, are there other ways that we can improve it and that sort of stuff, and leave the machine to worry about whether or not it broke things in other places. But in order to do that, we need full unit test or very close to full unit test coverage, or else our tests aren't reliable and we still have to take up human power doing that. So, yeah. It's going to take a culture shift in the community. But if we pull it off, then we get a longer code thaw cycle, which means that we have longer to push big, crazy features in there, you know, than we otherwise would.
Crazy features. Nice.
Crazy features, you know. Because something like Schema API in Drupal 6, for example, took about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months to really get that polished and in core. And if the code thaw cycle is only, if the code thaw cycle is only,
5 months.
You know, like 5 months, that basically lets you get in one big chunk and that's about it, you know. There's no time to then go in after Schema APIs in and make it even better and support relations and all that kind of stuff. You have to wait until the next development cycle, which is kind of a drag.
Right, right.
So,
So I guess the other thing that happened with this is that on Tuesday morning, sort of a working group met with Dries and came up with sort of a tentatively approved plan to get a lot of the SimpleTest into core. Is that right, Angie? You were there, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, they still haven't figured out quite the best way to do that. I think what they're going to do is take like just the unit testing portion of SimpleTest and put that in core, and then focus on a big focus to get unit test coverage in core, and then leave the functional test in there as well, but leave that to a contributive module to test those things out. Because basically, SimpleTest itself is bigger than Drupal core, and we don't want to ship something bigger than Drupal core with Drupal core, so they're going to take a subset of that, ship it with core, and then have contributive modules, you know, implement the rest of that.
Right. Cool.
Cool.
So what's this RDF that Dries was also talking about? I've discovered that it does not in fact stand for rich document format as is the output format of what is it, like text edit on the Mac, right? RDF files, these are different. This is a resource description framework, right? Other
sort of the semantic web Yeah, I think, well, just to put this in a bit more context, the big thing that really surprised almost everybody in the room and Dries' keynote was sort of his announcement of trying to push for the semantic web, which is essentially trying to put a little bit more structured into the data that sort of RDF is trying to represent knowledge, basically. They're splitting up things into triplets and which basically means, you know, three fields and how they're related to each other. And when you do that, you can basically represent knowledge. And it's been a long push for a long time, the semantic web. And Dries is sort of seeing that that's sort of where the trends online are going. And he really pushed hard for including more RDF functionality into Drupal, and there's been some new modules that have just come out recently, within the last 2 or 3 weeks, and it's sort of surprising to see how much it gained the attention and momentum within sort of as a core direction for Drupal itself.
Yeah, it was some interesting examples of what you can do with it. I mean, basically using the entire web as a database. There's really crazy things that you can do, interrelating things from all over the web, in really interesting and cool ways. I don't even know how to talk about it too much other than that it's like, wow, neat. There was that Sparkle stuff, right? Which is sort of, SQL sort of like, querying language for like querying things from off the web, right?
Yeah, there was another big session throughout at DrupalCon. It was the future of fields session, which is basically kind of like the future of CCK. And right now you have a node, which is the object, but the trend is moving towards making the more and more granular aspects of the node, such as the fields, its own object. And what that allows you to do is to then pull in external data sources. So there is sort of a overlap here between the future of the fields and the RDF, because they're both sort of focused in pulling in information from all over the web. It's like, instead of using your MySQL database to query, you're like using the whole internet as your database. And one way that Dries described this was quoting Tim Berners-Lee, saying that it's the World Wide Web, and it's going to change to the global graph, basically. So it's pulling in information from all over the web.
It's the future, folks. You've heard about it first here. Remember us.
Yeah. I think Dries has his slides and presentation and stuff available on his blog at buitaert.net. There's the State of Drupal presentation, March 2008 there, and it's got a video as well as a copy of his slides, so you can see the future in action.
The future is here, and the Lullabot podcast. So let's talk a little bit more about this sort of future of fields and field-oriented things. I mean, I've been sort of thinking this for a little while that, like, I know I've talked about lots of times when people talk about node access in Drupal or access to data in Drupal, oftentimes what they're not really talking about isn't access to the entire node or content. It's actually to aspects of the content. So you might have, an e-commerce site where there's like, you know, discount codes or, the actual like price that is paid, wholesale price of the good might be in the node. But of course, you don't want the general public to see that, but you might want certain people at the company to see those kind of things. This is where it's not really access to the entire node, but it's access to the fields. And with CCK, moving towards core and all this kind of stuff, you get a lot more focus on the fields this way instead of people creating custom content types like you used to do in Drupal, create an entire node type custom. Now we're just creating custom fields, and then people can create their own custom node types based on those fields. Were there other ways that you all saw this sort of change in focus to fields over the node object?
Well, I think it, like I said, a lot of also is, you know, just pulling in information. You know, if you want to be able to reference, say, a Flickr photo and vote on it on your Drupal site, you don't want to have to go through and download every single photo from Flickr and then store it in your database. First of all, you couldn't really even do that. And second of all, you may not even be able to do that in a lot of cases. And so, what they wanted to do is sort of create some sort of architecture where they could start to pull in sort of information and create some metadata about it in the database that you can start to actually start treating it like a node. So you can start to vote on it and do everything else that you can sort of hook into a Drupal module, but to really bring it down to the field level.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how this sort of shapes up over time. I still don't quite fully have my head around all the possibilities of it, but I'm excited.
Yeah, there was the other sort of interesting thing that happened here with this particular future of fields is sort of this trend of individual developers flying to a city and like having basically a code sprint. There was a critical mass of people that were thinking about this particular problem who happened to be in Chicago. And so different firms sponsored people to fly in to Chicago and work over the weekend. And they sort of called themselves the Data Architecture Design Sprint, what they referred to as DADS. So this DADS group, they got together and basically hacked together a lot of stuff. And this was the basic group that was presenting on this at DrupalCon. But I think that you're going to start to see that more and more of people getting together and having little ad hoc groups get together for a weekend and just really go to town with coding up stuff. So they seem to make a lot of progress just from doing that. And it was sort of exciting to see them come together and talk about it.
Yeah, that's cool stuff. I'm sure we will see more of that, I think, as people are sort of realizing the power of actually physically being in the same place. And with Drupal, there's a lot of communication through IRC and through the various sort of, website kinds of stuff and email and stuff. But it really isn't quite the same as kind of being with someone and working in something in real time. So that's pretty cool. Speaking of getting together all in the same place, Angie, you talked about this earlier. A whole bunch of Drupal people went to the University of Minnesota the week before DrupalCon and did a bunch of usability testing that also showed up in Dries' presentation. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, as in scary, as in, oh boy, we have a lot of work to do. But so basically the University of Minnesota paid for this usability testing, and a bunch of people, me, Dries, Karen S., Greg Knadison, Catch from Drupal.org, Bevan from Civic Actions, and more people that I'm sure I'm forgetting. I'm really sorry. We all kind of flew out there. Oh, Kieran, we all flew out there, and we basically they had a lab set up where we would let people work on Drupal, work through these Drupal tasks. And there was 8 different people who came in, and the tasks were: task 1 was basically create a content type for workshops. Task 2 was create. It was like create a user and give them permissions to post the workshops. Task 3 was, categorize the workshops, by academic program. And I don't even know what task 4 and 5 were because nobody got that far.
every single person got hung up at task one, which was creating content types. Nobody made it past that one without getting some help. We had like a little help desk set up that we ran, and if they got totally stranded, they would, you know, call us and say, help, I don't know what I'm doing. But it was interesting to see how people deal with getting stuck. Like, for example, you know that big blurb of front page text that appears at the front of a Drupal installation? People read every single word of that. And then they basically use that as their roadmap to how to get around in Drupal. And then, as you know, the second that you post your first piece of content, that completely vanishes and leaves them totally stranded. So they're using that as a tool, which was, you know, eye-opening, because we worked hard on that text, but we kind of just figured, nobody really reads that, whatever, it's just there for...
None of us read that, exactly.
Yeah.
But seriously, I'm surprised that everybody's so surprised, because when I first started using Drupal, that's exactly what I did.
Yep.
For the first several times that I installed it, until I got used to it. But
well, this is what... I've said this before on the podcast. I mean, it's like, if people are listening who are new, their perspective... goes away. I mean, that perspective of being new and being fresh to Drupal, and it's so clear to you in your mind all of the things that are difficult about Drupal, and it would be really great to just write them all down, and don't forget them, because you're going to forget them as you start to learn more about Drupal. You know, those things go away, and that homepage text there, you don't even see that after a while. So the problem, of course, with that is that difference that right you're saying, you know, we spent all this time writing this text figuring that no one would read it, and then finding that lo and behold, people are reading it, and it's a whole different perspective. So
other surprises were that when people get stuck, instead of calling the help desk, they will click on everything. So they'll click on every single link in the admin panel, or they'll enable every single module, or they'll, you know, do that kind of thing to deal with it. It's like they make desperate attempts to do anything possible other than ask for help on what they need help with, which is interesting because that's exactly how I work. But I guess I thought that other people, you know, would take the help that was given to them. It was really, you know, kind of interesting that way.
Just to interject there, just real quickly, I think one thing that happens also is that when people are filling out a form and they click on the help links at the top of the form, I think they found that they would lose the data that they were filling out.
Yeah.
And then they sort of like realized, I guess I shouldn't ever click on help again, otherwise it's going to destroy my data. So
yeah. Yeah, that was exactly almost a direct quote from one of the participants that clicked on the more help on formatting options link in the input formats text box, and they were using IE6, I think, or something. But anyway, when they hit the back button, everything they filled in the form was gone. And that participant said almost that exact quote that, okay, well, now I know that asking for help can destroy my data, so I'm not going to do that anymore. So it's just, you know, like there's things that we just completely miss because we're not looking through those eyes of a new Drupal person.
I think also, I mean, just there's I find that if I learn something myself, it's a lot more sticky than if someone just sort of tells me it and I need to kind of try and figure out what they're saying. And so, I'll certainly click around a lot myself trying to sort of figure, okay, let me just figure this thing out. And I can narrow in and, you know, try and learn the peripheral things and then eventually put it into focus. But, but it was fascinating. I mean, I wasn't there, but, to watch, I guess you were tracking, eye movement on the page as well.
Yep.
You could see where people were looking, and when they looked at something longer, it would get darker. And it was just fascinating to watch people's eyes darting around the page and where they look and how useful that is. I mean, you would think that wouldn't be useful, but it really is.
Yeah, for sure. It's and like a couple things that we noticed through that is nobody sees the secondary navigation at all.
In Garland.
People would be,
in Garland.
Yeah, in Garland.
Garland. No one sees the tabs.
Okay, all right. But
I just
still,
want to be clear
lots
about
of people
that.
Are working with Garland, so yes. It's just... But yeah, I mean, they'd be sitting there on the CCK field. Their eye tracking would put them right at the title of the page. So, like, the tabs are literally, like,
1 inch to the right. And they're just sitting there staring at the page, and they're saying out loud, because they're supposed to talk as they're, you know, working so we can see their thought process. And they're like, I'm looking for a way to add a field. And behind the glass, we're all like, just click it, you know. we're trying to, like, egg them on, like, come on, it's right there, you're so close. And they just would not see it until that was pointed out to them. So, you know, just little things like that that you never would imagine. Another thing that was really interesting was that people... They got taxonomy. They knew what taxonomy was and what it did.
Well,
they were librarians, so.
Yeah.
They came from library sciences, which is true. But it's kind of interesting because if you know what taxonomy is, the Drupal's implementation of it maps very well to the mental model of what that all entails. So it sort of backs up the argument that calling that categories when it's not actually categories is the wrong way to go. And that what we need to do is just put in better examples and stuff for people to know what taxonomy is, and then we, you know, end up educating them in the process and stuff like that. So I don't know. There was just a lot of interesting things on the user ad form. You know how there's the password checker thing. People would tab into there, and as soon as they type like A, all of a sudden this big red error pops up that the password's insecure, and they would vanish out of there in a flash because they thought that they'd totally broken something. And some of them would do this 2 or 3 times before they actually read the error, and then they notice, oh, okay, so this is just saying that my password's not, you know, correct. And in Dries' keynote, that this person stayed on that page for about 45 seconds reading all the error messages, and then like trying another password, and then reading all the error messages, and it's, you know, it's interesting to see how someone can spend, you know, upwards of a minute on something that we just tab through without even thinking about it and stuff like that. So, yeah, anyway.
It was kind of a humorous moment in the presentation because it was almost like the movie Being John Malkovich, where you're put into this person's head and you can see how frantically they're just, like, really, like, confused and their eyes are darting around. And the whole place was laughing about it. And Dries sort of just commented, it gets a little less funny after a while. So
yeah, no, that's just it. You know, we saw 8 people struggle through this. And it's funny because you'd think, okay, well, after 2 or 3 people, you kind of get the general gist. But each person sort of, you know, Drupal gave them trouble in different areas, in different ways. And they found different workarounds to deal with that. One person, in order to insert a form, ended up at the blocks page and started typing in HTML form tags into a block body. And that was how they thought they should make a form. So, you know, it's just, you know, Drupal not matching vocabulary and, you know, putting stuff where it doesn't really make sense. Like, why is building a piece of content under content management, not site building? And, you know, just stuff like that. So we came up with, like, a whole crap load of findings anyway, and people are actively working on improving Drupal 7 so we can fix some of this stuff.
Yeah. I think it's all interesting. It's interesting sort of sociologically as well, or just look at the Drupal and the Drupal community and the way that Drupal has evolved. Like, I wonder how this must look for, a company that's making a commercial CMS or, even like Movable Type or something like that, where they, you know, have over time done some level of user testing, that Drupal has gotten so far basically without any user testing. And the first time that we bring in users, you know, it's like, holy smokes. I'm sort of curious to see how that'll influence things over time. I mean, there's just always that, like, you know, invite a less technical person in to, as people are building modules or whatever, you know. I mean, I guess, you know, it's always good to kind of get to try and see it through a layperson's eyes.
Well, one of the Summer of Code projects that's been proposed that I think Jimmy Barry might be working on is making a sort of a module that can emulate a lot of what we were able to do in a lab. So, for example, it'll track where people clicked. It will track where their mouse moved. It will track how long they spent on each page. It will track the path that they took to get different places. So that the idea would be that as Drupal 7 is evolving, what we can do is start shipping this module out to, like, local user groups and stuff, and people can run usability testings, you know, against whoever, their members of their family or random people in the coffee shop or who happen to be there when they're there. And we can try and implement this this user feedback early on so we don't end up making a decision that we think is going to make things more usable, you know, like the teaser splitter or something, that ends up just perplexing people all the more and they have no idea what they're doing.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah, it makes it easier for people who are familiar with what it already does. Yeah. And yep. And I think, yeah, there's a lot of this. I mean, what the testing was, in my humble opinion, was, you know, it brought up all the problems, but of course it didn't present any solutions. It wasn't like you were sitting there with a bunch of usability experts. You were sitting there with some people that had testing equipment and watch the people having problems, but then how those problems are solved is another thing. But certainly the first step of solving them is making it clear what they are. So yeah,
and a lot of this we wanted to take back to the community too. We didn't want this small group of like 8 people to be dictating the usability direction of Drupal necessarily, especially since most of us who were there don't have formal usability training. We're just, you know, we're developers and we know how to roll patches and stuff like that. So we do want this to be a community process because ideally we want to bring the entire community up to speed on what makes usable software rather than it being, you know, kind of domain knowledge of only a few different people. Because the more people who know about this stuff, the further along it propagates. And then if Dries and Kieran and I all decide to go, you know, to the Bahamas or something, it's not like we lose a third of the people who have usability knowledge in Drupal. So I think the big idea was just to hammer home that this is important, that we have work to do, but that, you know, we can work together to kind of figure out solutions to these problems.
Can I come to the Bahamas?
Heck yeah, man. Bahamas. As long as they have Wi-Fi, otherwise I don't want any part of that.
It's called a vacation.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Yes.
I guess the final thing about the usability is that Dries really pushed hard in his keynote about different usability aspects in Drupal 7. So it seems like Drupal 7 is pushing to be a lot more usable and user-friendly, I think. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, definitely. Gosh, we've still got several other things on our list here. Drupal.org redesign. This has been talked about for quite a while, and I guess was talked about yet more at the DrupalCon.
The Drupal.org redesign, we had a panel where we basically communicated like the goals of the redesign and, you know, who's going to be working on it and what our goals are, kind of, you know, what our implementation plan looks like. And basically we talked about, you know, kind of the main goals that we want to do with the Drupal.org redesign is promote the Drupal project, provide tools for Drupal developers who are trying to improve it, and then also kind of fundraising efforts so that we can keep doing cool things. And on the implementation side of things, we talked about kind of attacking this from two different directions. And one direction is opening up an RFP process so that we get, you know, someone who actually has experience in you know, graphic design and in, you know, user interface design and information architecture to come in and sort of map out the website. You know, because that's the kind of activity that doesn't work well when you have 50 people all chiming in with their 2 cents on how it ought to look. But on the other side of things, we're going to have, you know, sort of a bottom up approach where, you know, we can fix a lot of the really obvious things that we know suck about the site, you know, like our module download section needs a lot of work. Even just browsing for modules is a bit tedious, and there's already issues in the queue, you know, that identify these, and we just need to get people on those fixing those problems. So trying to, like, you know, sort of collate all of those and maybe run them through drop or something like that would be one approach to fixing this problem. We talked about splitting the website across several domains. So, for example, you know, Drupal.org being the marketing side of things, like what is Drupal, who's using it, case study kind of stuff. And then, you know, that we'd have, say, downloads.drupal.org, which would be all the module download stuff. We'd have project.drupal.org, which is for developers maintaining their projects, and things like that, which would basically allow us to, you know, more flexibility to install crazy modules that are really good for one specific thing. Like, for example, we could potentially install wiki filters on the handbook site, but wouldn't have to hold up the main Drupal site, which is getting all the traffic from
from, you know, not from having, you know, all these crazy modules I have to wait on in order to upgrade to the next version. Like currently Drupal.org is waiting on, you know, project module, image module, a few different ones in order to upgrade to Drupal 6. We could bypass all of that and just keep the main site, nice and, you know, slick and slim down, so we could still test our latest release version against a site that gets, you know, gabillions of traffic a day. But at the same time, offer more flexibility for the people to focus on specific areas of Drupal.org and really build out those sections to something cool. So I think that's where we're going to end up going. There's a lot of implementation things we got to figure out with that, like how are we going to search across sites? How are we going to aggregate all of like the my content across all the sites? Currently, the only two sites that we're really doing this with are groups.drupal.org and drupal.org, and it's a pain in the butt because, like, if you ever want to, you know, create an announcement across both subsites, you basically have to create it in two different places, and there's no way at, you know, my tracker at drupal.org to tell me, you know, what group postings people have responded to. I have to go to a different place to do that, and, you know, so there are some implementation challenges that we're going to have to sort out. But the Drupal Association is going to raise, they're planning to raise something like $100,000 towards this and make this sort of the number one priority for 2008. So I'm hoping that we can see some real movement in this area over the next few months.
Cool. Awesome. The Birds of a Feather room at DrupalCon seemed like it was constantly buzzing. I don't think I ever really got a chance to spend much time in there, but I know that a lot of people spent a lot of time in there. What were some of the things that were going on in the Birds of a Feather room?
So at DrupalCon, there was basically four rooms: community and core, site building, design and user experience, and marketing and business. And if people weren't interested in any one of those sessions, they were either in the hallways or at the Birds of the Feather. And I think a lot of the actual real work was being done either in the hallway or in the Birds of a Feather, in the conversations that were happening there. Anytime there was a group anywhere from 5 to 10 to 20 up to 30 people, they had sort of like 4 to 5 different sections in the Birds of a Feather room with people talking about various stuff. A couple of things that I sort of went to and sat in on was modal dialogues and sort of the Facebook style of when you click on something, a window will come up that will sort of ask you what, ask for input or whatever the next steps are. And there's a lot of cases in Drupal where you want to delete something and it takes you to an entirely new page asking you are you sure you want to delete this? And a lot of the type of functionality can be rolled into a modal dialogue. So Tal Starbo, I know, has been doing a lot of great work with that, and there seemed to be a lot of good discussions that were happening there. There are also a lot of just discussions about asset management, media, talking about the new database PDO layer that Larry Garfield is working on. And anytime throughout the conference you wanted to go and just sort of listen to really wonky or technical discussions, the Birds of the Feather seemed like a really good place to be.
So the concept there, though, is that there was a room and people could – did they sign up ahead of time or was kind of – ad hoc, you know, people say, hey, let's talk about this thing, and they put it up on the – I know there was a whiteboard that had a bunch of stuff on it. And so people could, you know, say, hey, let's get a bunch of people together to talk about something.
I think that was one aspect, but I think another aspect was sort of the sort of corralling people in the hallways and telling them, ahead of time, like, oh, we're meeting about this at this time, be here. And I think that actually worked out really well, surprisingly well, except for if there's any conflicts of the sessions you wanted to be in. Aside from that, it seemed to be very buzzing throughout the week of people getting together and having some really intense discussions. So, but yeah, it was pretty much ad hoc. People would write stuff on the board and then sort of be in charge of gathering up people.
Cool. Yeah, yeah, like carnival style. Come on in! We're going to talk about media handling! Yeah, yeah! Only 4 shillings! Come on in! wait, what do they charge at carnivals? I don't know. Shillings? I don't know. so on, What else we want to cover here? On Friday of after DrupalCon. So DrupalCon happened Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Was it 4 days? 3 days? 4 days?
Yep.
It was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday at MIT there was a code sprint. Basically, everybody get around and sit in front of their computers at MIT. I didn't get a chance to go to that. Whom of you did, and how did it go?
It's actually one of the only things that I was able to attend.
It was you were finally healthy by Friday.
Yeah, I was. I missed almost all of DrupalCon, which I've been pretty quiet through this entire podcast because I was sick most of it, and I got to do my presentation on Thursday. I started to feel better, and Friday was the first day where I could actually, you know, sit down and talk to people and actually think about things. So it was the only day, so it was a highlight for me. I loved Friday. And it was really cool because I ended up heading up a documentation sprint that ran parallel with the code sprint. So for people who were not coders or didn't feel like coding or who specifically wanted to help with documentation, we had a bunch of stuff to do and hang out and talk about and toss ideas around and stuff like that. So we actually got a lot done, and I was really excited at the number of people who showed up because I was thinking that, hey, you know, I didn't know. It's a code sprint. It's the end of DrupalCon. Everybody's going home. I didn't know how many people would really show up, but we got a good group of people that came out, and we hammered away on the issue queue for docs, and we talked about some really cool new ideas that started out as talking about how to sort of reorganize the CDS handbook section, which is sort of a scary section for a lot of people. And it blossomed into this larger discussion on how do we walk through people who want to contribute in a lot of different ways and sort of gather that information together and present it in a task-based sort of, okay, so you're here and you want to, what do you need to do and what are the steps you can take and sort of walk people through. So which is really cool stuff. I'm really excited about it. Also out of that, we ended up creating a new IRC channel.
Hey, the documentation IRC team. Hooray.
Yet another. I mean, I don't know how many pound Drupal Dash channels there are.
Hey, wait, I'm not in this IRC channel. What is it, Drupal?
It's pound Drupal Dash Docs, D-O-C-S.
Of course it is.
And of course, nice. We sent the email out I've added it to the various handbook pages that talk about IRC, and I sent it out on the documentation mailing list. And actually we're also talking about having an IRC meeting actually, this week, which probably will happen before the podcast actually goes out, probably around the same time. We're talking about maybe having monthly IRC meetings where people who are interested in talking about particular issues or working groups within docs can get together online and have real-time discussions to sort of hammer out some of the larger issues that we want to address versus little specific tasks that are easy to do on their own. A lot of really cool stuff came out, and I'm really, really excited, and a lot of really good people are working on the team. So I feel really, really, really good about it, and that's pretty much, I would say, that's probably my favorite part of DrupalCon. Was getting to work on that with those folks.
Cool.
Yeah, and I was there too, and I got to sit down with Jimmy Barry, Boomba Tower, and we basically did some extreme programming on simple tests. So we were doing different functional tests for the blocks page. And the only issue with the whole code sprint was the internet connectivity was really bad in the rooms that we were supposed to be in. So what ended up happening was everybody sort of just spread out all over sort of the lobbies and the hallways and anywhere they could get some live internet connection, they sort of went off to. But it seemed like there was a lot of good stuff that was happening and work getting done with the project module and various other sort of small groups of people gathering together to work on various aspects. So I haven't seen any sort of like wrap up aggregating everything that got done that day, but it did seem like there was a lot of stuff getting done. So
cool. Well, I feel like we didn't cover half of the stuff that happened, but yeah, it was generally sort of cool stuff. Always good to connect with the people face to face, and stuff like that. Anybody have anything else they wanted to add about the DrupalCon week?
The only other thing I wanted to add was two quick things. One, we had a session where the GHOP students who could attend were all kind of presenting what they worked on and how they came to Drupal and stuff, and that was a lot of fun. And these kids are super sharp, and, you know, like Jimmy Barry pretty much single-handedly created functional tests for like half of Core, and Charlie Gordon was not only creating his own, you know, doing his own GHOP test, but he also created tests for other people to work on, and together with a few students, they built this neat Flexi filter module, which basically will let you, through a GUI, create any kind of filter module that you can think of. And then we have, you know, Michael, who wrote a bunch of documentation on panels and views and, you know, just all kinds of stuff. And it was really neat to hear them.
High school kids. They're all high school kids.
High school kids. Yeah, yeah.
You know, children are our future.
And then, of course, there was Dimitri, who's only 12 and was too young to participate in GHOP. And he was sort of the celebrity of DrupalCon. Everyone was kind of crowding around him. And he's great. He knows all kinds of stuff. And he's a really great guy. And it was really cool to get to meet him. And then the only other thing I want to mention is that we had a Drupal Chicks meetup on Monday afternoon, which about, you know, I didn't think anybody would show up because it was kind of like planned very ad hoc and just kind of, oh, let's add it to the board and see who shows up. And there was like 25 women there, and that's not including like Addie, who was sick, and that's not including like, you know, a few other people that were in other sessions and stuff like that. So anyway, we kind of discussed there about creating a group on groups.drupal.org for Drupal Chicks. So if there are any girls out there that are listening to the podcast and want to kind of meet some of the other women involved in Drupal community, or if there are guys who kind of want to make our 7% more like, you know, closer to 50 or at least higher than 7. Let's go for double digits, people. That would be awesome. You can join the group, and we're just going to kind of talk there about...
Oh, a percentage of women involved.
Yeah, in sorry, percentage of women involved in...
Like, how
in
are Drupal guys going to attribute your percentage? Like, they're guys.
See, Angie, I know that you're kind of weird, but the way this works is... Okay. But, yeah. So anyway, that was kind of cool, and there's already like, I don't know, 38 replies or something to the introductions post, which is really neat to see. And just different backgrounds and stuff and different, you know, levels. We have a couple of like super PHP hackers. We have a couple of like awesome designers. We have people who are in marketing and, you know, business side of things. And it's just neat to see all of the, just the, you know, diversity of levels of involvement and, you know, areas of expertise and stuff like that. And yeah, it's a pretty awesome little group, and I'm hoping that we can do more with it. I don't have any like really great big plans right as of yet, but I just kind of wanted to get people together and see what happens and stuff like that. So check it out. It should be cool. And yeah, I think that covers all of the talks that I gave at DrupalCon. I spent the entirety of DrupalCon either like, you know, putting together presentations or presenting, or putting together presentations or presenting. So it was kind of hectic stuff, but it was a lot of fun though.
Yeah. Cool. Great. All right. Well, let's call it a podcast. What do you say?
Woo!
It's a podcast. How was it, Ken? Woo! That was your first podcast.
It was good. Yeah.
I think you did a good job.
Oh, thanks.
Good job. Good job. Kent was all nervous about the hazing process. Apparently the hazing process involves trying to set up a USB microphone. I don't know.
Yeah.
Kent, what was the deal with that? Is it just one of your USB ports is weird?
Yeah, just different USB ports. Sometimes it just, after a certain time, it just starts to, I just start to sound like a robot, uh-huh, apparently.
Yep.
So
USB voodoo. Good yep stuff. Yep, yep. It's technical. I think it's up there on Wikipedia. You can find that. Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, there you go. It's a podcast. I hope everyone enjoyed it. Thanks for sticking around all the way till the end. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.